Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Okay, folks, welcome to the latest edition of the podcast Planet Porky with myself, the Porkmeister. I'm the junior member of the partnership here because, of course, the blossoming star of all things celestial is Leslie Ann Jones. Leslie Ann, a very good morning and a big welcome to you.
Good morning, Michael. How are we doing?
Well, we're doing very well indeed. I tell you what, I'm an avid reader of the newspapers, as you are. It's been our life. And some things I see sometimes. Have you seen the image of a family out on Beachy Head yesterday, and a little girl aged about 10 wanted to look over the edge of this cliff, which is about 100
feet high? I had to look at it through my hands. It was the most terrifying picture over the weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah, and the mother is actually holding the back of her daughter's anorak and allowing her to peer. I mean, my God, I know quite a bit about the coast. I live down there and my family are down in Bournemouth, and particularly in Bournemouth, we walk along the tops of the cliffs, and the actual safety barrier between the pathway and the edge of the cliff is at least 12 feet. It has to be, because cliffs crumble at the edge, you know. And this little girl was being allowed by her mother to get within inches of the edge. I mean, it made me physically sick. I suffer from vertigo anyway.
Yeah, no. Anyone who takes their children up the top of a cliff and allows them to look down into the abyss, I mean, they want their brains testing. Yeah. Are they fit parents? Yeah. It really did make me feel ill as well. I couldn't look at that picture properly. So please, everybody, keep your kids away from the edge.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes, by the way, even in Bournemouth, we see a family where they're letting the child scramble over the safety fence to go through some bramble to get nearer the edge of the cliff. And we have to actually say, stop that. You know, what on earth do you think you're doing? Honestly, it beggars belief, the intelligence of some people. But never mind about that. I tell you what I want to talk to you about, Leslie Ann. I've had a bugbear about a former politician, now turned journalist. He decided to enter our profession, but I certainly don't remember inviting him. And that is the former Chancellor, George Osborne, who now is laughingly the editor of the London Evening Standard. But he gave a talk to The Times, and one of the expressions he used in it, I always feel, is so ungentlemanly. He's got a new girlfriend who used to be his image maker, you know, and he lost a couple of stone and all this kind of stuff. But he said, I've never been happier. Really? For a father with two children who's had a previous marriage, I think that's horrendously insensitive.
It's very disrespectful. I've actually met his outgoing wife, Frances Howell. She's an author. She's a mutual friend. So she was at Oxford, obviously, with Giddy Osborne, as they used to call him up there. And I met her. Gideon's his real name, actually. Right. You know, it's a bit like Boris is really Alexander. It's that kind of scenario. I think it's an Oxford thing. But anyway, I met Frances at a 50th birthday party last summer. Yeah. And she's an absolutely charming lady. They've got two children, a 19-year-old son, a 17-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
And they obviously had a happy marriage for about 20 years.
Yeah.
So why would you then come out in public and say, oh, this is the happy I've ever been, and now I'm with somebody else? And it negates all the marriage and family life that you had with the person before.
Yeah.
And I think whatever you feel about your previous partner, you ought really not to be washing that linen in public.
Well, how do the children feel? The children,
exactly,
17, might still be devoted to their father and suddenly read that actually daddy wasn't happy during the 20 years that we were all growing up as a family, or maybe he was mildly happy, but he's happier now that we're not with him. I think it's horrendous, but I don't like George Osborne anyway. I thought he was a hopeless chancellor. I've got a personal beef because I invest in property. I have buy-to-let properties. And at one time, that was the only place you could put your money because interest rates at the banks were so poor, you couldn't get any interest in building societies. Then all of a sudden, he comes along and he wipes out income tax relief on the money you borrow to buy these properties. He wipes out allowances on wear and tear. He wipes out tax advantages. And look, I'm an apolitical person, but the whole idea of having a Tory chancellor, I thought, was low tax, and it suddenly became high tax under Gideon, and I frankly don't like him. I also don't like him for invading our industry.
I take issue with you there, Michael, because he did actually work for the Telegraph before he went into politics. He was a researcher, so he did have some experience of Fleet Street. He was also a speech writer, so you know he is a writer. Whether he has the talents to edit a newspaper, who knows? But look, the Standard is still going.
Yeah, well, the Standard is only still going because of Mr. Two Beards Lebedev. Two beards, because he has such a thick beard all the time, who seems to think that the biggest personality on the Standard is himself. Mr. Lebedev likes having pictures of himself. I hear music in the background.
Music of Maya? No. It must be infiltrating us from somewhere.
I think it must be, but that's okay. Don't worry. We like a bit of music now and then.
Yeah, we do. Do you remember, by the way, the Gideon Osborne rap?
No.
You remember that was all over the television. Get the deficit down. Get the deficit down. Getting the deficit down. Did you remember that?
I don't remember that. What I do remember, and this might be the responsibility of the woman who is now his girlfriend, he came onto the stage at some Tory party conference one time and stood rigidly like a spare part from a Monty Python film. And everybody said, what are you doing? You know, his hands were arched either side of him. His neck muscles were, you know, bulging. And she taught him, or somebody taught him, that, oh, this is the power stance. It makes you look like a more powerful person. But I've never liked the guy. I met him at an FA Cup final, okay. And I admit I copped out of attacking him about the tax policies on the property market because it wasn't the right place and time. We're in a room full of people, you know, and it would have caused a row. But I've never liked him. And when you say, oh, he was a journalist. Anyway, there's two ways into politics for these guys who come down from Oxford and Cambridge. They either become a political researcher, have never done a day's work in their life, or they decide journalism, as Boris Johnson did, because they know that's a path to it. So many people have been journalists. Dominic Lawson's father, who was he was Chancellor as well. He was editor of The Spectator as well.
Nigel, yeah.
What's his name? Nigel.
Nigel Lawson, yeah.
Yeah, so it gets on my nerves. Anyway, there you go. Now,
the thing that confuses me, by the way, is that Giddy Osborne's a rich guy in his own right. Okay? Yes. So his dad is Sir Peter Osborne of the Osborne and Little wallpaper empire.
Yeah.
So was the writing on the wallpaper, Mike?
No, I like that. I like that, Leslie-Ann. That's what you're here for, these fantastic puns and these wonderful turns of phrase. Talking about turns of phrase in great writers, I've just read a new book on Charles Dickens, okay? Wow, what a guy. He was a mega shagger. I bet you didn't know that.
Well, I did. Yeah, no, because I've read Claire Tomalin's biography of Charles Dickens. And you don't really want to know too much about your heroes. This is a prime example, isn't it?
Yes. Well,
what I was surprised by was that he died so young. He was only 58 when he died.
Well, he died on the job.
He didn't. No, he didn't. He actually died in Gad's Hill, his home down in Kent, which is very near where I was born. He was, you're right, with his mistress in Peckham when he had a stroke. And so they conveyed him by whatever means all the way down to Gad's Hill in Kent,
that's right,
where he died properly in his family setting to keep the image up, you know?
I agree, but he had the stroke while he was rogering Nelly, his mistress.
Or Nellying Roger, whichever way round.
That's right, yeah. At her place in Peckham, which he bought for her, by the way. That's the first example in history of a bloke buying a pad for his mistress, okay? And as you quite rightly say, Nelly was so upset, she had to get a couple of workmen to come in, load his body onto a cart, right, because there was very little sort of, internal combustion engine stuff around in those days, and get him back down to Rochester, where he later died. But, I mean, he was a mega shagger, apparently. He was at it all the time.
Well, the awful thing, and I don't want to know this about him because I'm a great fan of his novels,
so am I.
Have been since childhood. You don't want to know too much about their private life, do you? But when he got fed up with his wife, he blamed her, by the way, for having 10 children.
Yes.
Hello, we all know how that works. If you don't want your wife to have any more kids, you all know what to do.
Mm.
But he blamed her. He went off her because she lost her looks. He tried to have her committed to an asylum so that he could get rid of her, so that he was free to be with his mistress.
Yeah, that's right.
Which was quite common in the Victorian era.
It was.
And I think it's a shameful part of our history.
Very shameful. The last person I can remember doing that was J.R. Ewing in Dallas, who tried to get
Swellen. Swellen. Yeah, well, she probably should have been committed.
She could have. So I'm just reading my notes here on how it all ended. Yes, Nelly says he had a stroke while they were at it. She then went and recruited the church caretaker from next door and a handsome cab driver to put Dickens' body on her and get him back home because she feared the scandal would have had her jailed had it been found out. He's interesting geographically, Dickens, because my place down on the south coast, Gosport, is opposite Portsmouth, right, the other side of the harbour, and there's a house in Portsmouth dedicated to Charles Dickens. And in fact, there's a beautiful bar there called Customs House, because it used to be the Customs House in the days when the Royal Navy ruled the world and all that kind of stuff. And it has various rooms saluting great historians. One of them is Brunel, you know, the great engineer, Eastern...
Isambard Kingdom. Isn't that a wonderful name?
Absolutely. Isambard Kingdom Brunel. And one is Dickens. And, you know, it's got all paraphernalia about Dickens and all that. So he's a man who got around a lot. Now, last time we chatted, Leslie Ann, we referred to your coffee problem and how you've given it up and all that. Do you know what? I read a review of a book about coffee since I last spoke to you, and the history of coffee is utterly horrendous. I mean, it's all plundered from countries in South America, and quite frankly, the privations heaped upon, you know, the local populace and population are worse than anything that happened when people like the Spanish, you know, were after gold and the British were after the minerals of Africa. Horrendous stories. I hope you...
Oh, so true. Yeah. No, I was surprised to find out, actually, that it's the second most sought-after commodity in the world after crude oil.
Unbelievable.
And that so much child labour is engaged in picking the coffee. So these kids of 8 or 9 years old are doing 40-hour weeks in Guatemala. How can this world in the 21st century be allowing this?
Yes, I totally agree. And the great irony of it all, of course, is every time you watch any American series or any American film, the staple part of every American's diet, and I mean every American, is coffee. And so, you know, in the luxurious boulevards of L.A., in the glittering towers of New York City, you know, of everywhere from Texas to Denver, the staple in the richest country in the world is coffee. And as you quite rightly say, it's often produced by near slave labour.
Oh, yeah. And there is a thing called the United Nations International Labour Organization. Where are these guys in this scenario? Yeah. But do you know why people began to drink coffee in the first place?
No, tell me.
Because it activates the bowel in the morning.
What?
Do we need so that you can go and have a good clear out before you start your day.
Me. Oh, right. Okay. Well, I think we'll pass over that one, Blue. you know, one thing I simply can't handle is toilet humour. I've never have and never wanted to, and so... I know you.
Well, it's not humour, is it? That's a fact of life. It's a fact of everybody's life every single day,
sure,
if they're lucky.
No, I totally agree with you, and it's very important, obviously. Now, are you in any way, or have you ever been, a Harry Potter fan?
Oh, yeah, but my kids have grown up with Harry Potter because when the first books came out, they were very little children, so their entire childhood was lived to Harry Potter. So
really?
We're very familiar in this house, yeah.
Well, I'm not a Harry Potter fan at all. And by the way, I'm not against it. I think J.K. Rowling is just a fantastic woman. I mean, she's good looking. She's nearly a billionaire. She's self-made. She came up with one of the great literary ideas of all time, created something that will last, you know, hundreds of years, I would imagine. But every time I've tried to read a Harry Potter book, I've never got past half of the first chapter. And every time I've tried to watch a Harry Potter film, I give up after 20 minutes. And I don't know what it is, because I love the idea of all these little wizards, you know, in Hogwarts school and the train that gets them there. I think what I can't stand is I don't like the fantasy element of it, like big snakes and big animals and all that. And that's why I can't watch Game of Thrones either.
Yeah, no, Game of Thrones is not for me. That's far too violent. But you have to remember that the Harry Potter novels were not written for you. They were written for children. Yeah. So many, many parents discovered them through reading them to their children and so on. But the style of the prose is not aimed at you as a consumer. It's aimed at a very much younger kind of reader.
Yeah, but I can still read Enid Blyton books again with great warmth, you know, and think, golly, you know, this really is...
That's because you grew up on Enid Blyton.
I did. You're absolutely right. Secret 7, Famous 5. The reason I ask about Harry Potter is because J.K. Rowling, you know, the authoress, you know why the books were authored by J.K. Rowling? Because the publisher said, look, we can't tell people you're a woman. Nobody will buy the book. So instead of calling you, what's her first name? Is it Jacqueline or?
Joanne.
Joanne, that's right. Instead of calling you Joanne Rowling, I'm going to call you J.K. Rowling, like a bit of a mystery, you know. Like,
well, that's ridiculous. I'm surprised that she allowed that, because she's quite a feisty bird, isn't she? So I would have stood up to the publisher and said, hang on a minute, you know, let's re-educate the world here.
Yeah.
Women can write books like this. Let's just re-establish that one.
Well, what surprises me is that she didn't do that after about the second or third most successful of her successful books. I think she had to give in to the publisher just to get a publishing deal to start off with. I think I would have done. And then I would have said, no. People know I'm Joanne Rowling now, so let's go with that. But the reason I ask is that she's recently been responding to dozens of claims, both in this country and around the world, from the inspirations that she got for her books. Apparently, you know, there's a road called the Shambles in York, which I know well. We used to go to York a lot on TalkSport, because we would do the York races. So we'd always do the show from somewhere, you know, a pub in York city centre, and then go off to the racetrack. The York meeting was always a very big one. And there's a road there called the Shambles. It's a very historic, it's from the 14th, 15th centuries. And they're little buildings which are, you know, timber built, black and white timber built, and they lean towards each other. It's like almost like an alleyway and all that. And you know, they claim that they were the inspiration for a certain street in the Harry Potter novels. But the Shambles traders, you know, who've claimed it as theirs, have been badly disappointed, because she says, no, nothing like that. She says, actually, it all came from just one sit down in a cafe somewhere in Edinburgh. Oh, by the way...
Well, she says that, you know, she's going to say that because she doesn't want people exploiting her legacy.
Yeah.
But she has said in interviews in the past that Hermione Granger, one of her lead characters, was herself as a child, which I can get because there are similarities.
Yeah.
She and Harry Potter have got the same birthday, the 31st of July.
Oh, really?
And Ron Weasley, she said, was based on a close childhood friend of hers.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, there is a door in Exeter Cathedral closed, by the way, that I've passed many times because my daughter is a student there.
Yeah.
And that door is definitely a location in Harry Potter, as is, well, are a couple of locations in the Marais in Paris. I've recognised them.
Really?
So, you know, not all of it comes from the imagination.
Yeah.
A lot of it is stimulated by things that she's actually seen out there.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it is. The Shambles, I always remember for one thing. There's a particular building there, which is it's now a museum. And it was the centre of the Salem witch hunt, England style. You see what I mean? You know, it's where they went chasing witches in this country. And it haunts me whenever I hear the word Shambles or the word York, because they had a particular way of getting rid of the witches there. They used to press them to death, and it's a horrible thing. They would bring the witch in, and they would tie her to the floor, and then they took the door off the entrance to the room, and they laid the door on top of the witch, and then they invited passers-by to come in and stand on the door. I mean, it was horrendous, you know, but that's the sort of thing they used to do in the Middle Ages. I mean,
I thought they ducked them in duck ponds on a ducking stool.
That was before. That was very early Middle Ages. This is, we're getting up to now to about sort of 1600s. That was in about the 12 or 1300s. And that was a strange rule as well, wasn't it? They put them in the ducking stool and they ducked them three times and left them down the third time. If the person in the ducking school died, it meant they weren't a witch. So they were exonerated in the eyes of God, but unfortunately they died. But if they didn't die, they were a witch and they were burnt at the stake. So that was a bit of a sort of no-win situation, wasn't it?
Now, yeah, horrific.
What do you know about Niall Horan?
Not a lot.
Yeah. Isn't he a member of One Direction? Yeah.
Might be, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah, not really my era.
No, I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you said that because I know nothing about him either. Okay, so obviously he's not huge in the legendary pop world. But the reason I ask you is because he's apparently been turned down by a lady called Arabelle Chai, who apparently is a Love Island star, right? And the reason is because she's 5'10" and he's only 5'8". Now, you know, I mean,
that's quite big to me, I have to say. I'm only 5'3", so he'll do.
Yes, exactly. And she says, I can't go out with smaller men. But at 5'10", a woman hasn't got that much choice, has she?
Well, it's not that big a deal, is it? Lots of very tall women are with much shorter guys.
Yeah.
Do you remember Ronnie Corbett? He had a gigantic wife,
yeah,
didn't he?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, lovely woman.
And I think Bruce Forsyth's wife, Will Neelia, yeah, she was pretty much taller than him.
Yeah,
I think that's fairly common. Tall women are going to have to settle for what they can get.
Well, I suppose so. I think the biggest example, by the way, is Bernie Ecclestone. His wife, who was, she was something like Slovakian or something, wasn't she, or Croatian.
Yeah, she was Amazonian.
She was Amazonian, I agree. Very good looking, obviously, former model and all that. But I actually like taller women. Do you remember no, you don't watch a lot of TV. But there's a TV series called The Night Manager. And it was a fantastic series about drug smuggling in Mallorca and all this kind of stuff. And the leading man was somebody who's been, you know, Tom somebody. I can't remember which Tom. There's too many Toms around. It wasn't Tom Hardy, but somebody else. And he's mooted as the next James Bond. But the star attraction lady in that, who was the gangster's moll of the big boss played by Hugh Laurie, was 6'2" and wore heels. So she was 6'5". And I just think women like that are magnificent. You know, they tower above me. But I think they're really great. I've never had a problem with that. I'd go out with a tall woman tomorrow. But that's
what is it that you like, Dan? Do you like to be dominated?
No, I don't like to be dominated. I just think they look fantastic. One of my all time sort of heart throb S's is Maria Sharapova, the tennis player, who is, you know, not only terrifically good looking, she won Wimbledon at 17. She's 6'1", and when you see her in her heels with a modest skirt, she's fantastic. She just looks so terrific, and I think, why would anybody? Well, when I was a kid, and we were all growing up, and I'm sure you must have had this at your school as well, the tall girls always walked around stooped and with their shoulders hunched and their head down. And I used to say to them, what's wrong with you? Oh, I don't like to stand out in the crowd. But I think tall women should make the most of it.
I never had that problem. Oh, well, I was always the smallest one.
No, but you would describe yourself as petite and you look wonderful in the frame that you were in. You know what I mean? Somebody trying to get hold of us, by the way, already. We've got people.
They always are. They always are.
Yeah.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Okay, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky, the podcast. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. I have to say, Leslie Ann, that we don't half bounce around the subjects here, don't we? And I want to thank everybody who takes so much interest in these podcasts. And, every week we get more and more people contacting us. So I want to thank them for that. How do they get hold of you?
Oh, on Twitter, at LAJ Writer.
That's right. And I'm Mike Parry 8, or you can get hold of both of us on planetporkypod@gmail.com. Try to reply to as many of those as we can. And thank you very much. Now, here's something to intrigue you, Leslie Ann, because this is absolutely in your court. This was a tantalising teaser put into a newspaper I read recently. Which famous rock band have a faithful roadie doing time for them in a US prison after he was caught on a flight with their drugs. The deal is he will be a millionaire when he finishes his sentence, thanks to the generous compensation from the lead singer.
Oh, well, whoever this one is, he's not the only one by any stretch. This is quite a common, yes, this is a common gig in rock and roll. I actually know a guy who did, who was the fall guy for a band and who did serve time for them and is now on the outside living a rather lovely life. If I told you who he was, you'd know immediately.
Really?
Yes.
And was it an accepted part of the deal that, you know, rock gods have people who will take the bullet for them and they get massively rewarded for it afterwards?
I don't think it's in a contract or anywhere, but it's not unknown. You know, I have come across this quite, I wouldn't say often, but three or four times throughout my career I've come across this.
Is that right?
And, yeah, I know one of these guys personally. Now, the thing is, a stretch is not a very comfortable thing to do.
No.
You know, we all know that prison is no picnic. Not that we've had personal experience of that, but I think that it does drive some people a bit insane. There was an example on Fleet Street, wasn't there?
Oh, yeah.
During that financial crisis. So one of the guys on the express went down.
Yes. Well, there was certainly an example of it in the financial crisis. One of the guys did go down. But I don't think there's any question about the fact that he had committed crimes that were subject to a jail sentence. But the one I was really going to raise with you, and we won't mention any names here, but during the phone hacking saga in the early days, without a shadow of a doubt, a journalist took the rap and went to jail because that seemed to be the only appropriate way to try and still or even eradicate allegations which came along subsequently. And, of course, it caused a huge scandal. But
he went a bit mad in there. He did not enjoy it. So, you know, going to prison is not, you know, it's not nice for the guy who ends up going down. So however much money you get on the other side, it's never going to compensate for that chunk of your life that you lost.
No, that's absolutely right. I mean, in journalistic terms, there must have been, you know, all sorts of pressures left, right and centre. But you know the rock world better than anybody. Some of these guys would have done it simply out of adulation for those rock gods, wouldn't they?
Yeah, but, you know, imagine trying to keep them quiet for the rest of time because they are in contempt of court, the rock star who pays them. That's probably treason of some kind, you know, paying somebody else. It's a bit like if you get done for speeding or stopped in your car for some other reason and you try and make out that somebody else was driving the car.
Yeah.
That is a crime.
Yeah.
And if you get found out, how can you ever be sure, 100% sure, that the person who went down for you is never going to tell their story?
Well, I totally agree with you. And one of the most famous of all time, I think, is Mick Jagger and Marianne Faithfull. When Mick Jagger got jailed, it was overturned on appeal, largely due to the efforts of the Times newspaper, Don't Break a Butterfly on a Wheel. But he actually held his hands up and said that the pills found in an item of clothing were his, when in fact it was revealed years later, allegedly, they were Marianne Faithfull's. But that's a legendary decades-old story. Now, did you ever come across Fergal Sharkey?
Oh, yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, I liked him a lot. Yeah, he was in the Undertones and then he went solo.
Yeah.
I was on a TV show in the mid-80s,
yes,
co-presenting with Capital Radio disc jockeys Gary Crowley and Nicky Horn.
Wow.
Little Nicky Horn.
I know Nicky Horn.
Yeah, he came on our show and... A Good Love Is Hard to Find, I think the single was.
Right.
He had a very distinctive singing voice, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Yeah, very. And you're right, Undertones. I think John Peel said that his favourite ever single was Teenage Kicks, and he was the lead singer there. But I'm not sure if I've told you this story before, but if I haven't, it's worth repeating. I did the murder of Lord Mountbatten over in Ireland. It happened on a bank holiday Monday, around about this time of year, I think, or it might have been August, I can't remember. And I was working on the Birmingham Mail at the time, and I was the only person in the building at the Birmingham Evening Mail because I was running the news desk on that day, and I'd sent everybody else home. It was about 4 o'clock, and the story came in that Lord Mountbatten had been blown up, and I rang the boss at home and said, I really don't know what to do. It was the first time I'd ever run the news desk. And he said, you've got to send somebody to Ireland right now. And there was nobody to send except me. So I rushed off to Birmingham Airport, got a plane to Ireland and so on and so on, and did that. Anyway, the point of my story is, one guy who helped me a lot over there was a guy from the Irish News called Michael Sharkey. And it was only sort of a week later when we got back to Dublin and I was, you know, socialising with these guys from his newspaper, the Irish Press, that they said, well, you know who his brother is, don't you? I said, no. They said, it's Fergal Sharkey. I said, really? I said, who's he? And they said, oh, Undertones and all that. Anyway, to cut a long story short, 2 years later, Fergal's gone solo and he produces this record, you know, A Good Heart Is Hard to Find or whatever it was. It was one of the world's, you know, great single hits. And because I had worked with Michael and nobody knew where Fergal Sharkey lived or had talked to him or got an interview or anything, I rang up Michael and he said, oh, yeah, he lives in Hornsey in North London. And he gave me the address. I got round there, but about three streets before I got there, right, with the window down in my Ford Cortina, Daily Express Ford Cortina, yeah, I could hear this record booming out all over the place. And I thought, that's odd. I got into his street. He had all the windows open in his house, like all of them, right? And this record had just got to number one. It was booming out all over the place. And I went up and knocked on the door. And he was very aggressive to start off with. You know, what do you want? You know, what are you doing? What are you knocking on my door for?
Because I just played my music really loudly and this is where I live.
Exactly. Why don't you F off, you know? And I said, no, no. I said, don't be like that, Fergal. I said, I'm a mate of your brother's. You're a mate of my brother's? I don't believe it, you know. I said, well, ring him up and find out. He said, what? Stay here. So he, so I stood on the front doorstep for about, you know, a couple of minutes. He came back. He said, Rach, you can come in. And he'd rung his brother at the paper in Ireland. He said, oh, yeah, yeah, that's Mike Parry. He used to work for the Birmingham Mail when Mountbatten was murdered. And, oh, he helped me out, you know. So I got in there. I spent a good couple of hours with him. And as I was leaving, it was one of those classics, Leslie, one of those classics. I was coming out with the definitive interview in my notebook and in my head, walking up the pathway. And I told Fergal, don't talk to anybody else. They'll try and turn you over because they think you're just a bog trotter from Ireland. And of course, I know you better. And he didn't talk to anybody else. So it's one of those really, really lucky situations.
Well, doesn't that just prove it's not what you know, it's who?
Yeah, but I mean, I was very lucky to know him, wasn't I? I sort of stumbled on it. Anyway, listen, what you know, who you know and all that. What do you think of a young man called Tom Bradby, who reads the news every night on ITV News at 10?
He's a bit of a pussy, isn't he, really? He's not my cup of tea.
Really?
I think he's a bit wet. Mm. He spent 9 days in the Priory because he couldn't go to sleep. I mean, come on.
Well,
you know, take some sleeping pills. I know that you've had insomnia, and I know that's a very frightening thing. But yeah, when he said in an interview that it was more frightening than when he was shot in Indonesia in 1999. I thought, get a life.
Yes, I agree.
And he's been sucking up to Meghan, and I don't really like that.
Yeah, I agree with everything you've just said, actually. Tom Bradby apparently was very, very good looking when he was young. And, you know, women in his company used to say, send that boy to my room and all this kind of stuff, you know.
Well, have him washed first.
Have him washed first. That's a bit harsh. I can't tell whether men are good looking or not because I'm heterosexual. So I can't really, you know, tell whether they've got the rugged look and all that kind of stuff. But what I was going to say is the last point you made about sucking up to Meghan, that there's two ways of looking at that journalistically for us. One, he sucks up to Meghan. But two, I mean, he got the definitive phrase, nobody asked me how I am. Thank you for asking if I'm okay. And that, frankly, has created Tom Bradby now as a legend, hasn't it?
Well, yeah, in some people's eyes. But she's got to have some allies, hasn't she? Because
yeah,
I think the vast majority of people actually don't like her very much.
Yeah,
so she's got to have one or two people in the media on her side.
Yeah.
We'll give her that, shall we?
Yeah, well, yes, yes, I would. And as for the insomnia thing, I mean, I kind of agree with you. I've had insomnia for years. My sleeping pattern is I never sleep for more than maximum 4 hours before I'm awake again and I've got to get up and I've got to get busy, I've got to get doing things, and then I try to go back and go to sleep again. I sleep in pockets of sleep. Sometimes in a day I might get, you know, 7 hours sleep, but it will be 4 and 2 and 1. You know what I mean? I mean, I the conception of going to bed at 10 o'clock at night, waking up at 6 o'clock the next morning is alien to me. I'm more likely to go to bed at sort of 9:30, wake up at 2:30, start doing things, go back to bed at 4:30, get up at 6:30. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you know why this is. It's because we're older people now,
yeah,
and we don't need the amount of sleep because we're not growing anymore.
Yeah.
Our cellular turnover is way less than when we were young people.
Yeah, maybe.
So we don't need as much sleep. And I think we've all got to stop being desperate about getting to sleep,
yeah,
because the more we worry about it, yeah, guess what? It's going to keep us awake.
Yeah, well, you could well be right. Moving from sleep to bumblebees. Oh, a bit of action going on at your end.
Yeah, they're coming for me. I think maybe I made a few too many comments about Dominic Cummings on Twitter yesterday.
You could have done, yeah, absolutely. He might be knocking on your door. It sounded like Starsky and Hutch then for a minute. Now, what do you think about bumblebees?
I love bumblebees.
So do I.
I remember from biology, they're called Bombus terrestris. That's their proper name.
Yeah.
And there are 250 varieties of them.
Right.
And they're very important in the food chain, in ecology, because they pollinate lots of plants and fruiting trees, and they only are going to sting you if they're threatened.
Yes.
So you're quite safe with these lovely, fluffy bumblebees.
Oh, I love them.
And we should really encourage them in our gardens.
Oh, I totally agree. I sometimes walk across the North Downs and I stay away from the roads and I walk on the fields. I'm a bit more reluctant to do that in the last year or two since I've learnt that you can get attacked by the ticks off deers, which give you Lyme disease. And Lyme,
that's nasty.
Lyme disease is really horrible, honestly.
A friend of mine down in Brighton, her son contracted it a few years ago, and it sort of stole his teenage years, really. He'd been lying around for the last 7 years. It's been awful.
Sometimes you don't even know you've got it, and you can't understand why you feel so lethargic, and you can't, you know, you vomit and all that kind of stuff. When the doctors find out you have got it, there's nothing they can do about it. It's untreatable. There was that rugby star got it, the guy who was one half of a team captain on Question of Sport, Matt Dawson, yeah, something like that.
Okay.
And he told his story about it, and it is horrendous. So if I walk on the North Downs now, I stay away from forests and just open fields, and I wear a long sleeve shirt because that's where they tend to bite you on your arm. But the point I make is I walk across a field on a way just on the edge of a village called Kingswood, where there's a beautiful pub, used to be called the Two Pigeons, and the field on the approach to the pub, I once saw thousands of bumblebees there pollinating the flowers. And it was the most beautiful sight, honestly. You know, they're absolutely beautiful. Now, the reason I'm talking bumblebees is because I was delighted over the bank holiday weekend to get two messages on Twitter from two people who follow you and I, telling me how they'd rescued a bumblebee following my advice to them a couple of years ago. I went into my kitchen one time and there was a bumblebee, a big fat bumblebee, on the floor that had flown in through the back door, okay? And people's natural instincts are to get a, you know, to pick it up and throw it out. Some horrible people might hit it with a shoe or something like that, you know what I mean? But I knew instinctively what was wrong. The bumblebee had overdone his pollination work, but he'd overdone himself. And what happens is the bumblebees get too fat and heavy to be able to fly and they have to land, okay? They run out of energy. So what you do is you get a bit of kitchen roll, dampen it, and then rub sugar on it so it's wet and sugary. You see what I mean? And then you put it down in front of the bumblebee, and the bumblebee then has like a, you know, what's it called? Like something that protrudes with body. And
a proboscis.
A what?
A proboscis.
Oh, well done. Yeah, that's great. It's exactly what it is. And it sucks in the water and sugar, re-energizes, and lo and behold, it was like a miracle. About 3 or 4 minutes later, the bee just took off like a helicopter, buzzed around a bit, and then flew out the door and flew on its way. And I was so moved, I was almost in tears that I'd saved this bumblebee's life. Anyway,
you're such a kind, sweet guy, aren't you, Mike?
No, I like to do my bit for God's own creatures. Anyway.
Do you ever kill any kind of creatures in your house? Are there things that you draw a line on?
I have to spray areas where there are ants outside, that's all. But that's all, honestly.
We have a rule in our house. We only kill two kinds of creatures. We catch spiders and we put them outside.
Yeah.
We encourage the bumblebees to go back out. They come in because we've got bunny rabbits in the house.
Oh,
but we're only allowed to kill two things. One is clothes moths.
Yes.
And the other thing is mosquitoes because they bite and they leave big, horrible, egg-sized wheels all up our arms and legs.
Oh, no. I've never had a mosquito in my house, not that I know of anyway, because they buzz, don't they?
Yeah.
B, I would never kill a spider. I think spiders are fine. Spiders are very clean creatures, you know, and they can get into areas that you can't, and they do honestly remove, you know, like debris and all that kind of stuff. And what was the other one you killed? Sorry?
Clothes moth.
A clothes moth. Do you know what? I've never had moths. I can't believe it. I used to work with a guy who used to come into work and he spent a lot of money on expensive cashmere sweaters. And occasionally I'd sort of point to it and I'd say, what's that there? Oh, you've got a hole in your sweater. And he'd go mad and say, damn moths. I've got moths in my apartment and all that kind of stuff. I've never had a moth. Why? What attracts moths?
Well, it's a big problem in London, clothes moths. But I think we got them because we didn't have them for years.
Yeah.
My elder daughter went away to university and she was in the habit of buying a lot of vintage, you know, secondhand clothes from those mucky old secondhand shops. Sure. And she brought home a whole load of this kind of stuff, all these garments. And from then on, we've been infested with moths. I've had to throw so many sweaters away.
Golly.
But you know how you get rid of them? If you think you might have a problem with them and you've got cashmere and so on, you put the cashmere in the freezer and it freezes the eggs off.
Right, okay. So she must have brought a load of eggs back. Weren't those things that our parents used to hang in wardrobes all over the house years ago called mothballs because they
had
a pungent smell?
Naphthalene is the... is the chemical, but it stinks. Have you ever been to a wedding and stood next to somebody who stinks of mothballs and you think they've not worn that suit for about 15 years?
My overwhelming memory of Auntie Nell, and I've no idea who Auntie Nell was. No, I'm not joking. But when we had a family get together, Auntie Nell would turn up in this massive fur coat, okay, and a massive fur wrap and a big hat. She honestly looked like somebody out of Downton Abbey, you know what I mean? And the overpowering smell was of those mothballs. I'm not joking. It must come out.
Yeah, it's disgusting. It's nasty stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, getting back to the bumblebee, which started this, two people over the bank holiday weekend have sent me videos of them reviving a bumblebee after my advice that that was what to do. So that means that over bank holiday weekend, I've saved the lives of two bumblebees by proxy, by allowing other people to do it. And I feel really, really good about that. Better than, you know, being given a commission on a TV show or anything. I feel really, really proud that I've helped those bumblebees. Now,
so you should, and you can patent the Mike Parry method now, you see.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, listen, I was going to say to you, because you know me probably as well or better than most, I read this intriguing story about Eddie Jones, who is the international rugby coach. I don't know much about rugby. I don't know whether you do and all that. But Eddie Jones, who's very good at his job, decided from the start that he was going to appoint his own life coach to watch everything he did and to make judgment on his judgments. And I think that's a brilliant idea. I wish I'd got into that. I wish that, you know, I mean, I've made so many mistakes during my life by making rash decisions or decisions that were wrong or on the spur of the moment, or maybe because I had, you know, influential substances in my body, like drink. That's the only substance I've ever taken. And I just wonder what you think about having a sort of, you know, a human sort of guardian angel watching you all the time.
But do you really want somebody else telling you what to do at all times, or are you going to make decisions on your own behalf?
Well, you see, the way Eddie Jones works is he works out on training grounds. He works in offices where he's having to make decisions on the phone, and this guy's watching him all the time. See, I'm not sure if I was the news editor of a paper, I'd want somebody sitting there saying that was the
wrong. Definitely not. No, you're much stronger than that, Mike. You don't need that. Yeah. I think if it comes to something like sport, you know, tennis, it's quite common in tennis, isn't it, to have a life coach of some kind.
Yeah.
You've just said Eddie Jones in rugby. I'm sure it's common in other sports, particularly in America, which is, you know, where all the Eastern European stars head once they get big, isn't it, to sort of turn their methods around in that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I think in a game like ours, surely we're the ones that should be leading the way.
Yeah, well, you could be right. I mean, life is full of sort of, I don't know, exciting positives and lots of doubts, isn't it? So I think we all get used to that. Right, okay. Well, Leslie-Anne, that's us finished for today. The end of another Planet Porky podcast. I want to thank everybody for constantly getting in touch. We do have a great rapport with the audience, don't we?
Oh, I'm loving it. I get such funny messages from people. Yeah. And the emails are starting to come through now, which is lovely as well.
Absolutely terrific. So, everybody, thank you very much indeed. Stay safe, obviously, in these difficult times. And thank you very much for tuning into Planet Porky Podcast. We'll be back with you again very soon.
Ciao for now.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.